So the party talks kick off at Stormont later today. Talks, indeed, to save the Assembly. Big issues to sort out: the police assessment that the IRA still exists threatened to scupper the talks before they even began. While the parties also have to find a way through the welfare reform stalemate that had already brought Stormont to the point of collapse. The DUP leader, Peter Robinson, will be there today despite being hospitalised over the weekend. His party said he'd suffered a reaction to medication. Just a short time ago, I spoke to the DUP Acting First Minister and Finance Minister, Arlene Foster, and I began by asking her for an update on her party leader.
Well, we were surprised and indeed very concerned when we heard that Peter had been admitted to hospital on Saturday evening, but we're very pleased, obviously, that he has had his diagnosis. They've been able to find out what the problem is, and he was released just yesterday afternoon. So delighted that he will be there to lead our party talks team this morning.
And just clear something up for us, Arlene. He will be there around the table, or will he be there in the background to brief the party members?
Well, he'll be doing both, and he will be there this morning, as is normal, on the Monday morning at our officers' meeting, and then he will be at the talks at 11:30 as well, leading our delegation.
Is that fair on him, given the fact that he's just out of hospital?
Well, it's a decision he makes himself, as you can imagine, and he feels very passionately and very strongly about making these talks successful, and he wants to be there at the front. We're very grateful that he takes that attitude. He always leads from the front, and we're delighted he's going to be with us.
Your party colleague, Gregory Campbell, has said this morning that he feels that Peter Robinson should start to take things a little bit more easier. Is that something you would agree with? Do you think Gregory Campbell's right on that? Do you think is Peter Robinson pushing himself too much on this?
Well, certainly after he had his intervention in May, we hoped that he would be able to have an easier time over the summer. As it turned out, because of circumstances at the end of August, he had to return from his what was a relatively short break, and we just hope that he will be able to have a further break, because of course he has had a pretty significant intervention back in May. However, it is a mark of the man that he wants to be involved today, and we look forward to his leadership.
So, in terms of what's on the agenda today, what do you think is your biggest priority?
Well, there's two issues, and we've always said there are two issues that have to be dealt with, and indeed I heard the Secretary of State reiterate that this morning. Obviously, there's the whole issue around paramilitary activity. I actually see this as a great opportunity, and to deal with paramilitary activity, to deal with the criminality that goes on in some of our areas in Northern Ireland, and to get those paramilitaries off the backs of our people. So there's a great opportunity to deal with that issue during those talks, and it's very important that we do that right across the piece so that we can give confidence back to the people of Northern Ireland.
Isn't the danger, though, Arlene, that after this process we arrive back at the very point where we are now with the exact same assessment as the Chief Constable has provided, that the IRA still exists but on a peaceful mode? So are we getting people to do things for us that we already know the outcome of?
No, I don't think so. I think there's been a little bit of confusion about the role of the panel that has been set up by the Secretary of State. That panel is there to give a very specific readout, if you like, on where we are at this present moment in time in relation to paramilitary activity in Northern Ireland.
But the Chief Constable has told us that. But by doing are we in a sense saying, well, we don't really believe you, Chief Constable?
No,
we want to get a fuller picture?
I think he has given us a snapshot, a very important snapshot, it has to be said, in relation to where we are around that particular murder, the murder of Kevin McGuigan. But we want to see a wider picture of where we are with paramilitary activity across Northern Ireland. And, of course, this panel has access not just to the Chief Constable, but to the National Crime Agency and, indeed, to the security services and other police forces in the United Kingdom as well. So we will have that assessment. And then when we have that assessment, that will inform the talks and tell us what do we need to do to deal with that paramilitary activity in the coming years.
Isn't that the problem, though, Arlene? You put your finger on it there, that at the outcome of this particular process, which we're being told is October, that will inform the talks. The talks are beginning today. Does that mean then that there's going to be no real outcome from these talks until that other process is finished?
No, I don't think so. I think we can work on structures to deal with paramilitary activity. We can deal with what sanctions that can be put in place if paramilitary activity is found to have been happening with a party that's in government. We can deal with a whole range of issues. And, of course, we have to deal with the other big issue, and which, of course, is the Stormont House Agreement implementation, an agreement that we all recall was put in place before Christmas last year. All five parties signed up to that agreement, but regrettably, some of the parties have walked away from the agreement, and that has caused us real difficulties, particularly in relation to our budget.
And just on the issue of welfare, of course, is the other big sticking point. Teresa Villiers has said this morning that there is no more money from London. Do you believe her?
I believe her in respect of welfare, yes, and it's something that we have been saying for some time now. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Why would the government in Westminster give Northern Ireland more money than they're giving to people who actually vote for them in Great Britain? So we have long accepted that to be the case. We then put in process a more generous system here in Northern Ireland, topping up, if you like, the Great Britain system with money from our block grant here in Northern Ireland. Unfortunately, it was decided back in March and Fionn walked away from the legislation.
Is there the possibility, though, Ireland, that there could be some wriggle room here in terms of perhaps getting money for something else from London, not for welfare, which would then allow the Stormont administration to free up more money for welfare, do it in a creative way? Is that a possibility?
I think that is something that we should look at because Stephen Farre and myself put out a strategy on economic inactivity some months ago, a strategy that had been worked out, designed, if you will, with people involved in that particular sector. And I thought it was a good strategy, but we need money to deliver that strategy. So there's an example of where we could go to our government in Westminster and say, this is another way of dealing with this issue. And I think that is something that we should very much look at.
So you could find money then to appease Sinn Féin, essentially, to appease their demands for more money. Is that what you're saying? The top-ups? Is that where you're going on this one?
No, it's absolutely not where I'm going. We want to deal with the issues of economic inactivity, that's why we brought out a strategy to deal with economic inactivity, and I believe that we should very much look at that. So there's no more money for welfare. We know that is the case. In actual fact, with the top-ups that we put into place under the Stormont House Agreement, we are going to have the most generous welfare system in the whole of the United Kingdom. We should work on that. We should try to implement the Stormont House Agreement. And let's be honest about trying to fix the problems which have beset devolution. Because, you know, devolution's good for Northern Ireland, and we as a party want to make it work and not sit back and have problems occurring all the time.
Yeah, I think everybody can agree on that one, that devolution is good for Northern Ireland. But you talk about problems. We have problems today with our health system. We talk here about waiting lists being extended, the whole argument today about private health care now being employed or not being employed, as the case may be, to ease the pressure on waiting lists. While you're in these discussions at Stormont, we don't have a health minister, for instance. We don't have the other ministers in your party doing their job on a day-to-day basis. And people are looking at Stormont and think this is a farce.
Well, we said after the murder of Kevin McGuigan that couldn't be business as usual. There were other ways to deal with this issue, and you know that, and we put those to the parties. We said to them, adjourn the business at Stormont and allow us to focus on getting solutions. That would, of course, have left the ministers in place, but the other parties decided not to go down that route. And we had to signal very clearly that it couldn't be business as usual because we had to deal with the huge issues in front of us. I'm positive that we will be able to deal with those issues in the coming weeks if everybody focuses in an intensive way in finding those solutions.
And what about those commentators today? And a lot of people are speculating along these lines that what we're going to get is a fudge at the end of this particular process so that we can limp on to the elections in May next year, that we're going to get nothing really substantial out of this.
Well, that's not what we're about. We're about fixing the fundamental problems of devolution. Those problems have been there, as I said, for some time now. Some would argue for a long time now. We need to fix those fundamentals and get on with delivering for the people of Northern Ireland. And you're right to raise the issue of the health department. I mean, this is something that the health minister and I were discussing over the summer in relation to waiting lists, and we were looking at ways to deal with that issue. And hopefully, after the talks are over, we'll be able to deal with those issues again.
Arlene Foster, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
So there you have it, the assessment of the DUP as we begin this latest round of talks. We had hoped to speak to somebody from Sinn Féin on the programme this morning, but they tell us that there is nobody available to talk to us. We have, however, the SDLP's Alex Attwood and the Alliance Justice Minister David Ford. Shortly as well, we'll be getting the thoughts of the journalist and commentator Brian Rowan. But first of all, Alex, to you. There you heard what Arlene Foster had to say. She's pretty optimistic that at the end of this that the deal will be reached. Do you share her optimism?
I think that it's too early to be optimistic given the shadows that exist over these talks process. But if the two governments are very firm on the issues of rule of law and are very firm on the Good Friday Agreement, and if the British government recognises that there's still unmet need in Northern Ireland that they need to help and to help fund, then over the next 2 weeks we might turn a corner. Could I agree with one thing that Arlene Foster said? She mentioned the fact that herself and Stephen Farrey had produced a skills strategy, but it needs funding. If we are going to have a sustainable economy in the north, then we need more skills and we need more roads, and we need that more than anywhere else in the western counties of Northern Ireland. So I do believe that over the next number of days, the parties can come together with a new economic strategy based around infrastructure investment, based around skills, based around ensuring that...
And the bottom line with that, though, Alex, is more money from Westminster, is it not?
Well, so let's think about that for the moment. At the in Britain at the moment, they're talking about very heavy infrastructure investment, HS2. I remember asking Arlene Foster a number of months ago on the floor of the Assembly, would there be Barnett consequentials measured in hundreds of millions of pounds that could come to Northern Ireland as a consequence of London decisions in respect of investment over there? And she didn't quite answer the question. And my strong sense is that if the five parties come together, if the parties, for example, listen to the SDLP proposal about skills and roads, including in the Western County, so that the economic opportunity deals with citizen inequality, then that might be a moment when London will have to face all the parties with a compelling case.
Okay.
And we'll see
David
if
Ford.
They measure up.
Okay, David Ford, Teresa Villiers has said this morning, been pretty clear about it, there is no more extra money for welfare from London. What do you read into that? Is there the possibility here, as Alex and others are suggesting, that we might look at other pots to try and draw down money that may then free up extra money for welfare from the Stormont budget?
Well, the Secretary of State has, in a sense, already looked at extra money. I think the point that Arlene Foster made earlier on is probably correct, that the Conservative government is not going to fund welfare benefits in Northern Ireland at a higher level than their own constituents are getting in England, Wales and Scotland. So I think we have to accept that. But on the other hand, as Arlene and Alex have said, the economic inactivity strategy, which Stephen Farrey plays a large part in, along with Arlene Foster, is clearly something where Northern Ireland is suffering in a way that other parts of the UK aren't suffering. And it's entirely reasonable to look to the Treasury to provide some funding for that. It's also entirely reasonable that we look at an issue which has been highlighted most particularly by Mike Nesbitt, but it's of concern to all of us. I remember talking in the first Assembly about the issue of mental health, where there are clearly significantly higher needs in Northern Ireland than in other regions of the UK, and it would be reasonable to look to the Treasury to fund that. And last week, after discussions with me, the Secretary of State announced additional funding around the issue of justice matters, to deal with the threat of organised crime and paramilitarism. Specifically, she was looking at the UK-wide agencies, the National Crime Agency and HMRC in the first instance, but I think it is also reasonable to look to that. So there are issues where it's entirely reasonable to expect that the Westminster government, taking its responsibilities for the whole of the UK, would look at the specific needs of this region of the UK and grant additional funding. But I don't think that we're going to have any prospect of getting money for individual welfare benefits. We need to be, you know, be realistic about what we can ask for and what we can expect.
And what is it going to take, Alex Attwood, for your party to change their position on welfare, to move to the same place as the other parties, bar Sinn Féin, around the executive table? What is it going to take? Have you a figure in mind what it's going to take?
Well, it takes a number of things. One, the other parties should look again at the amendments tabled by the SDLP and the Green Party in the Assembly all of which were voted down, every single one by the DUP and Sinn Féin, which I think create good mechanisms to oversee and to deal with the issue of welfare. London has to recognise that on July the 8th, it announced that there's going to be changes in working tax credit. That will see in Britain 3 million people lose £1,000 a year. We don't even know what the figures are in Northern Ireland because DSD and Social Security Agency have said they haven't got the figures or they haven't got the capacity to work it out. So London has to recognise that working tax credits that affect all of our people from all backgrounds, working people, people in work, being losing £1,000 a year because of what London is deciding in respect to working tax credit. London and all the parties need to get their heads around all of that. And if we do, we can move this forward. But can I go back to the original question that you put, Arlene, about
just briefly.
Mark Durkan rightly said last week that this procedure whereby the security service of all people with the police are making an assessment of criminality over the next 3 or 4 weeks, he referred to that as a pop-up assessment. Here this month and gone the next. We have made much more rigorous proposals to the British and Irish governments and to the American government that deals much more decisively with the issue of criminality, that has deep-rooted assessments of what is going on and deep-rooted answers in terms of
let's hear from the Justice Minister on this one. This panel, this three-person panel is now going to be set up to assess paramilitary activity in Northern Ireland. Do we need this panel, David Ford? Surely that's the Chief Constable's position, to be able to advise our politicians on where we stand with paramilitary activity. Aren't they just going to be telling us what we already know?
Well, I think we need to look at what the IMC did in the past and what we need an independent body like the IMC to do now. This is not an issue of three worthy citizens being given information from the police or possibly the security service and saying whether they think that what is being said publicly is in line with what they've been told. This is an issue where the IMC previously in the past had access to information from the state agents, but also had the opportunity to do its own work and produced comprehensive independent reports over a period of time and over a series.
But surely the panel will be drawing the information from the same sources as the Chief Constable draws his information from. And it's going to be inconceivable, is it not, that they're going to come up with a different assessment than has already been provided by the Chief Constable?
Well, it appears that may well be the case in what was being proposed by the Secretary of State last week. But what we saw with the IMC previously, they did have access to independent information. They did take the opportunity to talk widely and to seek additional assessments beyond what those they were given. What we need to do is have a body like that now looking at the whole issue of the insidious nature in which paramilitarism has spread its wings right across society, its relationship to government agencies, its relationship to a number of political parties, its relationship to the way in which not just the justice system, but the whole system of government.
And it was interesting to hear.
If we're to tackle paramilitarism, we must tackle it once and for all.
And it is interesting to hear this morning that Theresa Villiers was talking about a modest sum of money to help in that fight against organised crime. And she said there's going to be this crackdown now. Surely the authorities should be doing that already?
Well, they should be, but there's clearly an issue of resourcing. But my concern is it's not just an issue for the justice system addressing the very overt signs of paramilitary crime. It's the issue of the way in which other agencies will reinforce the position of self-declared community representatives, the gatekeepers who access what happens in local communities. That has to be addressed. That is a task for every government body. That is a task for every political party, to cease giving the credit and the opportunity to people like that to suggest that they are able to push things forward. And they must be resisted. And we must see that solely democratic institutions function in the normal way.
OK, we'll leave it there. David Ford, Alex Atwood, thank you very much indeed for talking to us on the programme. Brian Rowan with us as well this morning to offer some guidance on how we might plot our way through this independent assessment panel. Brian, how do you see this actually working?
Well, I think the first thing we should say is that the statements on Friday by the Secretary of State and then the responses from the DUP leader and the decision of the Ulster Unionist Executive did nothing but clear the first hurdle into the talks. They resolved nothing. It's not as if these issues of paramilitary structures, purpose and role have been settled. They haven't. So there is this assessment that has been commissioned. from MI5 and the PSNI, which will then be marked or reviewed and checked by a three-person panel, which is still to be announced. The suggestion end is it will include someone from an intelligence background and two people from here bringing local knowledge to the process. But given that this assessment is being prepared, and you've raised this issue in a number of the interviews this morning, that this assessment is being prepared by MI5 and the PSNI, we've a pretty good idea what it will say about the IRA, because it has already been said both by the Chief Constable George Hamilton and by the Secretary of State Theresa Villiers, based on her security advice. So I don't see any shocks coming in this assessment that is to be delivered into the talks in a few weeks' time.
And there's no sense behind the scenes, Brian, that the Chief Constable is going to review what he said already. They're pretty robust, aren't they, in the defence of what they've put in the public domain?
Well, if you have a look at what's there already, so George Hamilton said that there is a leadership structure still in place within the IRA, albeit in a radically different role, which is managing this transition from conflict into a peace process. And some people might argue, well, has it taken 21 years from the ceasefire to do that? Has it taken 10 years from the statement that ended the armed campaign to do that? How much longer is all of that going to take? Theresa Villiers says what she has been told by her security advisors, meaning MI5, is broadly in line with what the Chief Constable said. The difficult bit in all of this, Enda, is the assessment of what happened after the Jock Davison killing in May. Davison, once a senior IRA figure in Belfast, through then to the murder of Kevin McGuigan. The assessment from the police being that members of the IRA carried out an inquiry into the Davison killing, and that members of the IRA were involved in the McGuigan murder. And I have heard nothing to suggest any change in that police assessment. My understanding is they believe they had and have sound policing reasons for making investigative lines public, including their belief that there is an IRA link to the McGuigan murder.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, Brian, essentially is that come this time in October, we will be no further forward? Do you think everything will be the same in terms of the assessments that are in the public domain?
Well, I think what we need to find out and is exactly what is being asked for off the PSNI and off MI5. Arling Foster said that up to this point we have a snapshot. We're looking for the wider frame assessment, she said, in terms of the DUP's position. So this assessment will not just be about the IRA, it'll be about the loyalist organisations. I assume it's about the dissident threat as well. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, do I detect any change in the policing position, in relation to what they said about an IRA structure and about the Kevin McGuigan murder, the answer to that question is no. In fact, I think they're hardening up their position. They're confident about the assessment they've given. They believe that there were sound reasons for arrests and the timing of those arrests. And you'll know just last weekend, the senior Republican, Bobby Storey, said there was no basis for his arrest, no intelligence or evidence put to him, that he's instructed his solicitor to take legal action against the Chief Constable. So there is this huge gap, Enda, between what the police are saying and what Republicans are saying. And I don't know how an assessment delivered in a few weeks closes that gap and how that assessment will play out at that point within this talks process.
And interestingly as well, Arlene Foster in the programme earlier talked about moving on even from that assessment to talk about what structures are going to be in place at Stormont to ensure that those parties aligned to paramilitaries do not benefit from office, so to speak. So she's already jumping a step ahead, if you like, even before we get the results of this particular panel.
And that was set out in Peter Robinson's statement on Friday as well. He said today's statement by the Secretary of State is a welcome first step in demonstrating that the government are taking our concerns seriously, he said. And he said, we recognise the Secretary of State is now taking action to address the two concerns we had raised. We have consistently argued that ultimately the business of determining the long-term steps to address paramilitary links must be addressed and resolved through these talks. So, and that's the point that I was making to begin with, Enda, that really all that happened on Friday was a jump was taken over the first hurdle. There are many other jumps to be taken, and this is not, and you've made that very clear in the the interviews you've done this morning, this talks process is not just about paramilitary structures and activity. It's about these other issues of budgets and welfare, the past flags and parades, all of that trying to be settled within a short, sharp, intensive, focused talks process. So there's a huge piece of work to be done. I think the easy bit was done on Friday, and the hard bit is still sitting on the table there within this talks process.
And just clear something up first, Brian, in terms of the structures that are there or not there, as Sinn Féin would say. Mm-hmm. When it comes to getting information, for instance, about the disappeared, we know, of course, the family of the prison officer down south met with representatives from the IRA. Does that not indicate that there are some structures there to allow that to happen?
Well, I am not shocked at the assessment that there is a structure of some description there, because if you go back to the last IMC report, which dealt specifically with the IRA organisation, it made the point that the military parts of the organisation had been collapsed, that there would be no statement made at that stage, nor would a statement be made about the disbandment of parts or all of the organisation. And they used that term, that what was there would wither away or fall into disuse. Okay. I think what has brought all of this into sharper focus now, Enda, is not that there is some sort of skeleton or dormant or redundant structure there. It is this assessment of the Kevin McGuigan murder and this suggestion that current members of the IRA were involved both in an inquiry and then in that killing.
Okay, Brian, we'll leave it there. Thanks as always for sharing your thoughts with us on the programme.